KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland, California.
Visitation Valley.
Excelsior District.
Ingleside.
Coming up, the latest on the criminal case stemming from the ghost ship warehouse fire.
Almena was going to be sentenced to 9 years. Harris was going to get 6 years in jail. But then in a really surprising move, the judge rejected this deal.
Then we'll introduce you to avant-garde singer, producer, and composer, Ash.
San Francisco really just gave me a refuge and a home to be able to just be myself and make the art exactly as I wanted to.
And from our series My Life, My Stories, a woman recounts the consequences of renouncing Catholicism as a young girl in the 40s.
I said I was sick and tired of being Catholic.
That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Investigators still don't know what caused the fire inside the ghost ship warehouse in Oakland almost 2 years ago. 36 people died because of the blaze, and survivors and victims' families are still searching for accountability and justice. Prosecutors say two men, Derek Almena and Max Harris, are responsible. They'll appear in court tomorrow. KALW's justice reporter Holly J. McDeed has the latest. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Hannah.
So what should we know about the two defendants going into this trial, and why do prosecutors say that they're responsible?
So the two defendants are 46-year-old Derek Almena and 28-year-old Max Harris. Derek Almena is the master tenant of this large warehouse space called the Ghost Ship. This was this relatively affordable space in Oakland's Fruitvale District where dozens of people, a lot of artists, lived. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't safe. Prosecutors say Almena filled the space with wooden antiques, wooden sculptures, pianos, all these flammable objects. Mm-hmm. And Almena had admitted to jury-rigging the electrical wiring from the building next door to power the ghost ship. People who live there say he basically laughed off suggestions to bring this building up to code. Mm. So it's under those conditions that prosecutors say the space became a death trap. Then there's defendant Max Harris. So he was there the night of the fire, December 2016. He helped organize an electronic dance party there. And while he was getting everything set up, prosecutors say he blocked off a second stairwell. And they say that left people there that night with only one way to get out of the building as it was engulfed in flames.
So what is their defense?
Well, to start, Harris, his attorneys deny that he blocked a stairwell. But beyond that, the bigger picture, they're trying to shift blame. Blame to the owners of the building for not doing repairs. Mm-hmm. They're blaming PG&E for not doing anything about the faulty wiring. And then, of course, they're blaming the city of Oakland. So fire inspectors, police, even social workers from that city, they all went into that space at different points in time. Mm-hmm. And so prosecutors are saying they had the opportunity to do something, but they didn't. Mm. And an East Bay Times investigation found that police had visited the site 35 times between mid-2014 and the night of the fire. Mm. But people didn't expect to hear any of these arguments play out in the courtroom. That's because defense attorneys and prosecutors had actually reached a plea deal this summer for the two defendants. Mm-hmm. Almena was going to be sentenced to 9 years. Harris was going to get 6 years in jail. But then in a really surprising move, the judge rejected this deal. And judges almost never reject plea deals. Mm-hmm. So families and lawyers were both really shocked about this. Mm. This was the same judge that approved the deal just a month before he changed his mind.
Okay, so why did the judge change his mind?
So the voices of the family members involved in this may have played a role. Mm-hmm. So prosecutors had warned these families that a trial could be really lengthy, it could be really traumatic, and in the end of all of this, defendants could be found not guilty. Mm. But the families of the victims, they wanted to go to court because, first of all, they thought that the plea deal was too lenient, and second of all, they just want to hear answers. They want people to get up on the stand and explain what happened that night and all the events around this fire.
Right.
So many of these families of victims, they got in front of the judge. They really begged him to change his mind. They testified in front of him about all that they had gone through. Mm-hmm. During the hearing, a prosecutor even read the statement from a mother who had lost her son, a musician, in the fire. Mm. And she wrote that she wished she could have plea bargained her grief to just a few years rather than the rest of her life. Mm. So many people think that that really influenced the judge. But the judge was also influenced by something that the defendant, Almena, had said. Mm-hmm. So the judge didn't buy that he was remorseful because one of the reasons is he wrote this lengthy letter, about 30 pages long, saying that he was both a witness and a victim in this tragedy. So the judge said that he did not buy that Elmena was actually remorseful for all of this.
Okay, so what does all this mean for the defendants?
So because the plea deal was a package for both of them, they're both going to go to trial. So both of them are looking at a maximum of life in prison if they're convicted.
And where does the city of Oakland fit in with all of this? Are they partially responsible, or what about that point?
So many of the families involved certainly don't think that Max Harris and Derek Elmena are entirely to blame. They say this is bigger than just two people. They filed a wrongful death lawsuit against a number of different parties, including PG&E, the city of Oakland, the building owners, and several other people they say bear responsibility too. The lawsuit also demands that Oakland improve policies around inspecting buildings. So they're not just demanding money, they're also demanding that changes be made to how the city of Oakland does things. But the city of Oakland is going to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, to try and block that lawsuit.
So how do you assign the blame for this, you know, this huge building fire, lots of people involved, institutions? What do you even do?
Well, so that's really what this, both the criminal case and the civil suit are all about. I mean, legally, it's like trying to determine if you can prove that actions of a city, a person, or an agency contributed to someone's death. And that's complicated. But then there's also just different forces that came together to form the backdrop for this fire, like the sky-high housing prices in the Bay Area that caused people to find refuge at the ghost ship in the first place. So there's all these different societal dynamics at play that we won't necessarily get to see in this trial that will come up next year. But regardless of the outcome of that trial, we will still learn more about what happened the night of the fire and events leading up to it and why this happened.
Okay, Holly, thanks for the update.
Thank you, Hannah.
Holly J. McDeed is our justice reporter. You can reach her at justice@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco-based singer, producer, and composer Ash released his debut album, Mother, this year. It tells the story of his estranged relationship with his family and details his journey to San Francisco from India 17 years ago. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, Ash shares just how the city gave him the creative freedom to make his art.
My name is Ash. And my work is chamber and electronic music.
Oh, Lord, you wait for me, what you know, cause in the sea.
My mother hadn't heard any of this work. My mother had never seen me perform. And I hadn't seen my mother in a very long time. In the middle of the set, I saw in the audience my mother. And I wasn't sure for a moment if that's a physical being or if it was just my imagination. There's something that overtook me, which I just didn't know if I could perform any further, because if it really is her and she's listening to this for the first time, we haven't had these conversations in real life. And she's seeing me perform this in front of all these people in her presence. I wonder how she'd feel about that.
If I could erase all of the memories.
The arts were a privilege for me. And good or bad aside, the arts are still a privilege. The value system and the kind of family I grew up in, we were really busy figuring out, like, how are we going to make ends meet? We were busy figuring out things like, how are we going to be safe? And when you're dealing with that, those things, the arts are like, who cares about the arts? But if you are growing up and you know that it's just bubbling inside you, that you need to create, you need to write song, you need to write music, and you're always like trying to grasp the next piece of like music you could find, the next tape cassette you could find. But you didn't say goodbye. I grew up listening to a lot of Indian classical music, a lot of like jazz standards coming from primarily the States, like Ella Fitzgerald. And then also in my more formative adolescent years, I would listen to like the big pop acts coming out of the States, Whitney Houston. Those kind of more diva-esque sounds. And then on the other end, I was listening to this. There was this whole phase in the 90s of like heavy metal. There was like Metallica, Megadeth, like all that stuff was coming through. And a combination of all of that really helped broaden my horizons on what musical possibilities can be. And then I went to music school. So growing up, listening to all these different genres of music, going to music school, which is in the Western tradition, learning composition, classical music composition, and then learning voice, and then learning songwriting, all that combined into coming into this form now. Coming from India, moving to the United States was in itself a migration, right? A very literal migration. But there's also a life migration of getting to a place where I could actually pursue what really my calling was, to make music, make art. And that took some migration, like some emotional internal migration, also migration to place and finding a space which I could actually create it in a way that was accepted, safe, and that there was value seen to the art. And then there was also migration of, you know, I came out after coming to America, and there was a migration of what does my new narrative look like in this new land that I migrated to. You know, in India, being gay is still a crime. Like, you could still be thrown to jail for just being who you are. San Francisco really just gave me a refuge and a home to be able to just be myself and make the art exactly as I wanted to. And there are people around me who were doing similar things, who were excited about what I'm doing, and they're there to support it. You see that all's white. My debut album is called Mother, and there is a whole maternal mother theme through the entire thing. Mother, fundamentally, at the first level, is really about my relationship to the feminine, to the female, as it's been shaped by my mothers. And when I say mothers in plural, because there's that spiritual mother, there's my biological mother, there is the mother who raised me, and then there are my sisters, who are much older than I am, a whole different generation, and they've also been maternal figures. So there've been a lot of like mother figures in my life, and they've all shaped me in different ways. And I need to work that out first, as the first piece of work that I put out as Ash, as an individuated being, away from that mother body, almost as my own being. So that's why I call it Mother. In order to work through the life changes, and in order to heal from you know, the family falling apart, from us not being able to talk, us not knowing how to deal with your child coming out, or your child turning out to be somebody you never imagined. To heal through that, I needed to work it out all through music. And this is the record that I work through most of this stuff, my relationship with my mother's, through the work as an observer almost. And because of this distance here in the States and my family being spread out across the world, because of this distance, I had the great luxury almost to be able to be an observer of my own situation, of what had happened, what had transpired in the last decade with me and my family, and to be able to understand that in a more sorted, objective manner, and to put that into, turn that into song, so I can listen to song and understand, oh, this is what really happened between us.
That's San Francisco musician Ash. His debut album, Mother, came out this year. You can find more information about it at kalw.org. That piece was produced by Bo Walsh. You will find truth was that the same joy weeping turning. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we have the third installment in our series, My Life, My Stories. If you missed the previous ones, My Life, My Stories is a local nonprofit working to gather oral histories of San Francisco seniors with a larger mission of engaging elders in general. Today, we'll hear the story of Sam Alicia Duke. She was born in Nebraska, but in 1942, she moved with her mother, Chris, and her older brother to California. While her teachers commended her intelligence, her education was interrupted because of a childhood illness. Here, Sam recounts the consequences of renouncing Catholicism.
I had always been put into Catholic schools, although I was a non-believer from the time I was a baby. And all these years, I had been going to this youth group at the church and so on. Well, I just up and told the pastor of the church who was had the youth group. I said, I was sick and tired of being Catholic. I had never believed in it. I had argued against it from the time I was in first grade when I was 4 years old. And I said, I'm going to renounce Catholicism. Can I do it at your church? And he said, well, why do you want to renounce Catholicism? And I said, basically because I never have believed in that particular concept of Christianity. And I was never really sure about Christianity anyway. And so he said that if I wanted to renounce Catholicism, I could do it at his church, which I did on the third Sunday of May, 1949. Anyway, I publicly renounced Catholicism and went to the beach and came back home. And one of the members of the youth group, a very staunch Catholic woman, called Chris to tell her that, did you know? And of course, Chris didn't know. And so that Monday morning, I did not go to school. Chris had taken me down to the juvenile authorities and told them that I had done this absolutely horrible thing and that I was incorrigible, I wasn't recanting it, and blah, 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 blah. It just so happened that the juvenile court judge was a Catholic man that my brother knew, and so they wound up. I never did finish going to the last 2 weeks of school at my junior year, I wound up being put into what they call juvenile hall in Los Angeles as an incorrigible delinquent child. So I was made a ward of the court, taken away from Chris. I was placed in a work home. You could go to school 4 hours a day and then work in the home as a cook, cleaner, babysitter at all. And you would get $5 a week cash, and the people who you lived with gave you your room and board. And I was working in the house about 14, 15 hours a day, going to school 4 hours a day. And I wound up getting sick again. So in April, I had a complete collapse at school, and ambulance called, blah, 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 and was taken back after I got out of the hospital. I was taken back to juvenile hall. So I was in juvenile hall, and my social worker had asked me what I wanted to do. So I was going to be finished with high school, so I told her that I really, really, really would love to go live with my father if he would have me. And I didn't know my father at all, but he had been very kind to me when I was a child living in Omaha. So that was arranged, and a court hearing was held, and I was going to go to be with my father in Minnesota. Of course, Chris and my brother were having fits about this, but that was too bad. I was delighted to be having a chance to go meet my father. I was delighted to be getting out of Chris's house. All of a sudden, the first week of June, the judge who had originally put me in juvenile hall miraculously reversed the other judge's hearing that I would go to, and I was going to be sent back home to Chris. And the only thing you could do back then when you were going to be 18 years old, a girl could get married at 18 without parental permission in California. A boy couldn't. So I set upon determining that I would somehow or other get married when I was 18 to get away from her. And as it turned out, I was successful in finding a boy that I could marry.
That's Sam Alicia Duke. She lives in San Francisco's SoMa district and is a member of Senior and Disability Action. Though she's mostly confined to a motorized wheelchair, you can still find her at protests fighting for the rights of disabled San Franciscans. That story was part of the project My Life, My Stories. It was edited by KLW's Emma McAvoy. My Life, My Stories is hosting a free live storytelling event this Sunday, November 11th at 7 p.m. Seniors will share their memories of what brought them to San Francisco. That's at Adobe Books in the Mission. You can listen to the three-part series online or subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. Go to kalw.org and click Cross Currents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sarah Coast, Angela Johnston, Kristen McCandless, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Porfirio Rangel, Josh Wilson, Lisa Wang, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Still Woozy from Oakland. Catch them at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco tomorrow night. Show starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. All the think about you. Prepare to leave my body when the time it comes through. Love it on you till the time it comes through. Why you always hate to break bread? Jokes on you when it's time to come through. Well, if she had to choose me or her mom, I know I wouldn't last long. Yeah, no problem with the truth. But when she made me laugh, doom doom right to my tomb. My love is not to be in a place where life is easy. Like, what the fuck is real? What the fuck is wrong? I think I can fit with your tone. Like, all I think about you.